I am here once again drinking the milky, sweet and smooth light of Nescafe Gold with my buddy Pharaoh. How are you doing on this fine Thursday afternoon, Pharaoh?
Yes, good, thank you very much. I've got a delicious homemade smoothie to take me through the rest of the day.
Lovely. A smoothie. That's nice. So we're gathered here today, Pharaoh, to talk about World War II propaganda after having been through Women's Lib and World War I. But did you know that I almost caused World War III earlier on today?
I did see a Twitter storm around a certain topic, yes.
Yeah, I happened to tweet. I mean, I might as well share it with you. Let me just see if I can find it. Here we go. We were meant to have Panama Hat on, by the way. He may still join us, but he is somewhat AWOL. He has caused confusion and delay. So you'll have to excuse us for being a little bit late. But here we go. Here's what caused all the problems. This may seem an odd question, but why don't January and March give their extra day to February so they each have 30? I mean, it occurred to me, January's 31, March is 31, February's 28. It could be 30, 30, 30 if they just redistributed their days a little bit. And this has caused, you know, I was accused of being a French revolutionary. Many people called me Robespierre. All sorts of aggression came from that. I mean, you can see I had 78 likes, but I think I was ratioed in the end, and I'm not ratioed very often. So, what are your views on this matter?
Well, you know, I for one, I'm a fan of the kind of organic calendar that we've built up. You know, names from different places and weird numbers. You know, I appreciate it. I mean, you've got to remember that obviously with the leap year, your plan falls down because once in every 4 years, it becomes uneven again. You know, if you want that kind of sad total symmetry, yeah, go to the French Revolutionary calendar, which is one of the worst things ever created in the history of humanity.
Why is it 31, 28, 31, though? What sort of nincompoop came up with that?
I bet it's all based on like lunar cycles or something. I always assumed, but I don't really. I'm not into astronomy.
I mean, this came from a late night disagreement between me and Mrs. A about how many days there are in the year, and I can't remember. I was quite. We forgot which way round it is. The 365 days in a year.
Yeah, 365.25 technically, and then we just add on.
Is leap year 366? Is that right?
Yeah, but every single year you've technically got that extra half a quarter of a day. Though it still happens, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I was then trying to calculate the days in the year. It's like in bed at like 2 a.m. And then it occurred to me, like, what is the nonsense of 31, 28, 31? Also, we were talking about how awful that rhyme is, you know, 30 days hath September. Was it?
April, May and November.
April, May and November. But no, it's June.
No.
June's got 30, I can't even get it right. This is the sort of nonsense you chat about 2 a.m. Yeah. What is that rhyme? Starting like midway through the year. Very confusing.
And then probably it's basically more confusing, like, then. It's very specific in the first half, and then it's like everything else is 31. It's such a cop out rhyme.
That is the worst rhyme of all time. Oh, are you still with me there, Pharaoh?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know. I'm getting my buddy Morkar has been in the chat, by the way, Pharaoh, and lots of people he's not me, he's a friend of mine who started up a kind of gaming channel. He's been mainly playing Street Fighter so far, and I just thought, you know, I give him the occasional signal boost, so subscribe to Morkar if you're interested in that. Although I'm told he's going to switch from Street Fighter to ZX Spectrum games in the next week, so got that to look forward to. All right, so shall we get on with? Oh yes, and Entropy is open for the people who like to use Entropy to do their super chats. That's down in the show notes. If you scroll all the way down, it's the last link is Entropy for those people who want it. Okay, so let's get going then with the propaganda. Mm-hmm. I'm going to share my screen. You can see that. And shall we start with America and move to England again like we did before?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good idea.
Mainly so we can say that the British propaganda was superior. I don't know if that's actually going to be true this time around. But
I don't think it is.
Stop him. And the job's done. I mean, Dr. Zeus wouldn't get away with this, would he?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we often think about the Axis having these kind of like racial stereotypes or degrading images of different ethnicities. But the Americans against the Japanese are pretty savage. I always think this isn't even the worst one. This was relatively mild. But you've got this kind of like heavily squinting, grimacing Japanese guy staring, you know, pointing a gun directly at you. I guess this is kind of this is after the kind of you know, VE Day and the kind of second you know, part of the war or whatever. So it's literally the job's almost finished. You just got to kill the Japs, and then the job's done.
Yeah, I mean, this is what this is always of interest to me. I'm always interested when the system, by which I mean the American, I could call it the Anglo-American cathedral, I guess we could call it, or the you know, the powers that be, give plebeians permission to be racist, essentially. And this is what I see World War II Japanese propaganda is kind of, well, we need you to go and die for us in the fields. So we're going to lean heavily on the old xenophobia and racism because that will get you going. Just as they did, of course, in the Gulf War. You know, they leaned in. You know, there are times when the system leans into certain things when they want a certain outcome. They needed to get people up for this war in World War II. I mean, one of the things people forget about the American point of view of World War II is that most Americans wanted nothing to do with it. You know, World War I was not very popular, and you know, Wilson got America involved. I think one of the reasons for America's lateness into the war was because FDR had to convince the nation that, you know, it was worth doing, because most normal Americans didn't want to be involved. I mean, I don't think that's just kind of propaganda from the Mises Institute. That's literally the truth, isn't it?
Yeah. And again, that, you know, the ethnically speaking, the Americans have a high percentage of Germans. You know, so again, it's kind of like you're in a fight to the death against, you know, people that, you know, you would have known and loved previously. So it must have been very tough for a large proportion of the population, I think.
So, and you know, the Japanese front of the war. Now, I don't know. We always think of the war from the British point of view as a primarily against the Germans, right? Whereas I feel like in America, the Japanese angle of the war was bigger. And like the aftermath of it, the cultural memory of it is much more against, not more against, but equally against Japan as it was against the Germans. Whereas for us, it was always the Germans, right?
Yes, it's interesting because obviously we actually had a huge number of eastern provinces, but we basically got curb stomped by the Japs pretty quickly. Like, you know, obviously Singapore, that's just humiliating just how quickly we lost. And I think it just showed the state of the empire that a pretty poorly armed force managed to sweep through the east and you know, I think we were lucky not to lose India basically at that point. But I guess culturally wise, again, Americans came in through Pearl Harbor. I think it's just, again, part of the mythology, isn't it? You know, they brought us into the war. You know, the whole kind of A-bomb and the occupation of Japan afterwards is much more in the consciousness.
It's also in the kind of culture. I mean, you know, I mention a lot, I watch, you know, I'm a big wrestling fan, as you know. And just in the commentary, you know, Gorilla Monsoon was like, oh, lucky Pearl Harbored him. You know, there was a lot of references to, you know, Japanese villains in wrestling. Mr. Fuji, people remember.
Yeah.
One of the funny things about Japanese wrestling villains is that they're all Hawaiian. like Mr. Fuji was Hawaiian, for example. So, yeah, very few Japanese wrestlers in America are actually Japanese, which is ironic because Japan is a great wrestling nation as well. There's a lot of great Japanese wrestlers, but they tended to stay in Japan. Anyway, and when they did come over, it was always a bit weird. Giant Barber had a few runs, you know, early on. Okay, so let's move on from there. What do we make of this actual propaganda itself?
Yeah, I think it's pretty weak. Again, I think it's just its purpose is just to dehumanize, turn the Japanese into the other, build up. You know, it's all about building up disgust for other people. I always think this dehumanization efforts from both the Allies and the Axis side. So I'm personally not a fan of this at all because again, you got to think about, you know, you have to deal with these people after the war. So what happens when you totally dehumanize them, and then, you know, what's the reaction going to be afterwards? You know, it's short-termism, but it is effective at the same time. But this is you end up getting like people, you know, doing like literal war crimes against Japanese civilians and stuff like that, isn't it? So
I can see Owain in the chat mentioning Yokozuna. He was Polynesian as well. Like literally none of them are Japanese. Trying to think of an actual Japanese wrestler who turned up. I mean, the great Muta was Japanese. He was genuinely Japanese. Antonio Inoki, when he faced Muhammad Ali, he was Japanese. Trying to make any and yet, you know, now that I mention this, people don't think about the cultural memory on the other side. And you know, in Japanese pro wrestling, Pharaoh, all the villains, like the Americans, were villains over there because they, you know, they still remember the war. So it's kind of like it kind of worked both ways. That's a little avenue that I may explore on Cigar Stream in the coming weeks and months. What happened in Japan after the war? Because that was a fairly traditional culture, wasn't it? That essentially, yet another place that was bombed into liberalism.
Yeah, exactly. Like, check out the Meiji period. It's fascinating in terms of like culturally how they adapt, because all of a sudden they go from, again, basically living a feudal life to the Industrial Revolution happening. But the Japanese produce this kind of weird and beautiful mix of industrial items, but still with like all the handcrafted expertise of the Japanese. So actually, in many ways, they I think adapt quite well to that first opening up pretty well. But I think the post Second World War, they lose a lot culturally. You got to think. I think the Americanization really begins in a big way.
I tell you who was actually Japanese, Mr. Saito. He was a fantastic wrestler. He actually tagged with Mr. Fuji back in the old WWWF days in Madison Square Garden. He was actually Japanese. I'm not sure about Professor Tanaka, the old 70s guy. Feels like he wouldn't be. But Mr. Saito was actually a member of the Japanese Olympic squad at one point. As was Yatsu, the great Yatsu. Anyway, let's move on.
I think Panama's in the room if you want to let him in.
Is he? I don't see him. He's not there, Pharaoh.
Okay. Okay, sorry, he's getting his laptop, he said. He's almost there. Apologies.
Okay. So do the job he left behind.
Yes. Yeah, so I think
I don't
this is
like
interesting.
That.
Well, it's interesting because basically this is the beginning of all progressivism. When you start to see a lot of these American ads, the ideas of the, you know, the empowered woman, the woman in the workplace, you know, women taking up the slack from the men, all of those ideas come from this propaganda. And I think the question you need to ask yourself is, what happened to the propagandists after World War II and where do they go? And, you know, a lot of them end up in advertising. A lot of them end up in government departments. And, you know, the propaganda never stopped, let's just say, after the war. But it's interesting, you know, like one of the feminist icons is, you know, Rosie the Riveter and, you know, the kind of strong, powerful women of the Second World War. And quote in quotes, all of those ideas are generated by this propaganda campaign.
Sorry to keep on going back to rest. I can't let it go. Someone in the chat is talking about Tojo Yamamoto. He was a guy who had a career down in well, he worked the territories, and he later became, you know, I guess people these days might know him from World Class when he was a manager. Not really Japanese, he was Hawaiian. For a fact, I know that. So, yeah, almost every Japanese wrestler from the territories days, apart from Mr. Saito, will be Hawaiian secretly. Apart from any Florida fans, Pak Song I think was Korean. So, anyway, carry on, Pharaoh. So, yeah, I mean, I don't like the way this seems to be pitting men against women already. It's like talking behind his back, you know. I think it's a bit smart.
Yeah, and again, it's like left behind. It sounds like he's just like walked out on the job as opposed to risking his life for the safety of his civilization. So,
there's Panama hat. Hello, Panama.
Good afternoon, chaps. I apologize sincerely for my lateness. But you must remember one is half African. So occasionally
you have caused confusion and delay. Yes, again, Panama hat.
don't brick me in the tunnel there.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, we've just been talking a little bit how the Americans weren't really that up for being it. Like, when I say the Americans, I mean the American public weren't really that up for being in the World War II. So the propaganda effort was actually needed. They needed to persuade people, like, you know, why do we have to go and fight and die for effectively nothing, something that's got nothing to do with us? So you'd agree that the propaganda effort was required. And I've also said it's an instance where, again, it's where the system gives people like permission to be permission, quote unquote, to be racist, because they're asking you to die for them essentially. So, you know, let's ramp up, let's dehumanize the Japanese for a while because we need you to, need you to fight them now, which is interesting. In fact, the more pre-World War II history I've read, the more it's obvious they've been at this game for a very long time. The kind of, let's just say, conglomerate of governments between London, Washington, and various financial institutions, let's just say.
Oh, yes.
They've been at this sort of game for a good while, because don't forget, in Britain, like, there wasn't that much will to be part of World War II in Britain.
Certainly not still, the amount we thought there was.
Well, I mean, Churchill famously was had to bulldoze his way through against much opposition, which is a kind of shown. It's now told as a hero narrative.
Yes.
A few weeks ago, YouTube was very, very eager for me to watch Hoover Institution interview with somebody who's written another Churchill biography. And it came on autoplay. You know, sometimes you end up like accidentally watching a Jordan Peterson lecture or something. And it came on, and he mentioned something. He said, yeah, there's been, you know, 197 Churchill biographies, 998th. So there's a deep mythology built around kind of, you know, the figure of Churchill and the heroism mm-hmm. of World War II. And it's just kind of interesting when you consider the self-destruction that caused from the British point of view, you know.
Well, I was talking about this with somebody quite literally this morning, and we were mentioning how World War II was such a kind of human tragedy, just on a sheer numbers scale, that they didn't want to repeat this mistake they made with World War I of not having a clearly defined goal or reason for it. So it's why, for example, the Nazis are seen as, you know, these are the most evil people that ever lived. These were the new benchmark for evil in the world, and that's why we had to go and fight them, you know. And it's why they created sort of the World War II mythos around the sort of the narrative there, which we didn't have in the First World War, and which caused a lot of problems, obviously, because, you know, what did all those millions of people die for? And when people have that mindset, they're willing to try some very, shall we say, unorthodox methods of changing the systems they're a part of, which obviously after World War II, if you think about it, after World War I, liberalism was weakened. After World War II, liberalism was at its strongest.
Strengthened, yeah. And in fact, I discovered, because, you know, I'm reading things all the time, I discovered some very interesting elements to the dissolution of the British Empire as well, in terms of specific people in specific leadership positions. You know, in India, for example, they had a problem where I think they wrote a report saying, there's an issue here. 95% of people living there are kind of happy to live under British rule, and this is an issue because, like, you know, there were 5% of agitators, let's just say, and you can clearly see elements in the British leadership, I'll just put it that way, working to agitate, to foment the radicals, if you want to put it that way. And then in the Indian case, sowing multi-ethnic divisions, which you know, then has the catastrophic effect of the partition in 1947, which is another terrible event in history, really, and then created new regimes that were kind of actively hostile to, you know, I'm thinking of Pakistan in particular. Actively hostile to, let's just say, British interests, but not necessarily to the interests of the people that we're talking about. So there's a lot of hidden history in and around this area that I keep finding out about all the time. And the more I've read about it, the more it kind of makes sense once you know certain things. Yeah. So let us move on then. So yeah, and you can see in this image here the seeds of what's so frustrating, what looking at some of these images is the fact that it's obvious manipulation, right? It's like, well, we need you to do this now, so we're gonna spin the narrative this way because we need you to do it. It's kind of it is horrible. It's like the mass, you know, the mass man all the time being manipulated by dark elites.
This just one last thing before we move on is there is something iconic about it as well. You can see her face is lit up. She's almost like heavenly and beautiful, you know, and beautiful. And again, it's kind of like there is like slight religious undertones to it. I think, you know, just kind of the religion of you know, construction and being part of the you know, what's going to be the consumerist system, basically.
Also, I mean, it's sort of a, I think as you sort of were hinting at, it's a reversal of everything that women were up to this point. You know, even though they'd obviously done this sort of thing in the First World War II, this was where it became irreversible. You know, it's now women's place to be in the factories alongside men making things and not being at home anymore. You know, you can see how much the foundations of the current system rest in World War II and the world wars and how much it changed the fabric of the society.
Yeah. This is why Panama, I lost so much patience. Like when I was trying to discuss the Boomer Truth regime, I just couldn't. I had very limited patience with the people who weren't understanding that. If you remember around that time, I was like, you know, why are you blaming the boomers? I'm like, just shut up and try to understand what I'm talking about here, because it is a kind of ground zero, 1945. It's like there's a very obvious effort to de-emphasize prior history or to make history before World War II seem like the very distant past. And I think it's been very effective because the cultural memory doesn't seem to extend much further back. And, you know, one of the things that used to wind me up as a music fan, and I've discussed this before, was the way in which the 1960s is treated as kind of like the birth of music, you know. So that any effort to go before, like, you're just encouraged to think, well, there was nothing before like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, apart from like boring club crooners. Now everybody was Frank Sinatra before then, and that's it. No prior music. I feel like that effect is across the whole culture, where it's like you're not encouraged to delve much further back, and if you are, the past must be denigrated. You know, in the way that in the way that 1381 John Smith is denigrated, so must you denigrate, you know, every other bit of history up until you get to this moment, essentially.
I mean, I wrote a piece not long ago where I said that 1945 was liberalism putting everybody in check, and then 1991, when the Soviet Union collapsed, was the checkmate, because, you know, it went to massive industrialized warism and various ideologies that were standing against that sort of order. And then, of course, it didn't have to go to war with its other enemy, the Soviet communists. That simply collapsed on its own, you know, years later. So, you know, that, and then now we're at a point where, you know, aside from a couple of sort of tin pot, you know, like you got sort of the meme of Korea, there isn't really an opposition to it. I mean, I don't see China as being, say, a real enemy of liberalism. It's kind of a progenitor of liberalism of a different stripe.
It's funny, because if you go back and read stuff from the 50s and 60s and 70s, it was a kind of open secret that Washington and Moscow were not the mortal enemies than you imagine, right? It's like, you know, you take the FBI, right? The FBI we're meant to believe, are kind of ruthlessly efficient when it comes to attacking anyone. Let's just pretend there was a rogue mid-century German in 1967. The FBI would be like ruthlessly, murderously efficient when it comes to dealing with him. But when it comes to dealing with like communist spies, they're a kind of kamikaze joke, you know, almost like a kind of clown outfit when it comes to dealing with communist subversion. And it was ever thus. So one of the things that happened in 1991 is that the almost like the false flag of the commies was taken away, because now they had to kind of own the fact that the true source of what we call left wing subversion today was Washington, not Moscow. This is something that I've, you know, because it was always convenient for, you know, we mentioned the Hoover Institution. It was convenient for them to point to Moscow. Oh, you know, it's not, it's them, or they're the real enemy. They're the ones who are causing all of this. And in a way, since 1991, they've had to own the fact that that's not really the case. And, you know, to the extent that China plays the same role as Moscow, there's not even the pretense of that anymore. It's like, well, they're obviously kind of on the same side. So, let's carry on then. I will say it's not that straightforward with the Moscow question, because many people think Stalin kind of went rogue on his own after a certain amount of time, and he was no longer controllable, let's just say. There is that. So there are question marks around that. So let's have a look then at this. Don't let that shadow touch them. Buy war bonds. Oh, look, they're at it again with the war bonds. worked in World War One. Why not do it again?
Well, I think it's interesting about this is, again, it's the psychologizing of symbology. You know, Panama talked about this. This was built up to be, the ultimate evil. And, you know, the symbol of the swastika here, even its shadow falling upon your children, it's kind of like an earthly spirit or shade that will steal the life of your children if it even touches them. And again, I think it's no wonder that the power of that symbology, you know, exists today. And, you know, everyone says you're not, you know, being called a Nazi is the worst thing in that you can be, you know.
Yeah. What is the, what are they going for? Is this a kind of reference to the original, like, you know, discoverers of America, or like, what's the, this is obviously like a naval theme with this guy here.
I think it's more simple. I think it's literally just, here are some children playing outside and they're about to get murdered by a swastika. I think with this one, it is literally like the symbolism is very direct.
It could be that they're sort of representing the different forces. You know, the guy with the hat is the infantry and the guy with the plane is the, you know, it's kind of reminiscent to that, but I think it's pretty obvious this poster.
Yeah. Careless talk got there first. What's this?
So this is kind of like one of the big issues, obviously, is information leaking out. And again, I think Second World War, alongside, I think after First World War, people recognized the power of propaganda, but also information and information control. And so a lot of effort was spent on making sure that people didn't blab about maneuvers they're going on, and, you know, like where they're off to next. And so obviously we see here a paratrooper regiment murdered even before they got to the ground because someone's told where they're about to land, basically. So careless talk got there before the soldiers and murdered them. So it's pretty brutal.
I mean, the thing about this poster is it does kind of have a hard truth to it. I mean, I would suggest anybody who's interested read into the history of intelligence in the Second World War. Just even regardless of what we think about the people that were participating in it, the story of how information was passed and leaked around was fascinating. This scenario was technically sort of this could happen, you know, if one careless person working on a base told someone who they thought was their friend about where the troops were going to land, and then it turns out that friend is like part of a big spy network, and they can relay that, you know, back to the Germans in what, like, you know, a couple of hours, and then the entire attack is ruined, that sort of thing.
See, as a symptom of growing up in the most depraved time of all time, I'm just reminded of the McDonald's advert from the early 90s. Do you remember? McNuggets away.
What?
There was a McDonald's advert where the McNuggets were soldiers parachuting down, and I did this, you know, so just reminds me of it. But now that I think of it, it was probably the other way. You know, I think that McNuggets Away advert was probably referencing wartime propaganda. This is a famous one. This is still used, isn't it, this one?
Yeah, literally, in the hipster part of London that I live, people literally put this woman in their on their windows with like some kind of COVID message and stuff. But this is what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying about the these like liberal and progressive icons are created at this point, and the same messages, the same slogans are used from this point. So, like I said, the propaganda never stops.
Yeah, and it's like each one of the narratives that was set up in 1945 has to, you know, has to be taken to its logical end point and conclusion.
That's a really good point, because this is basically like, in some ways, that the like feminism, because again, this is the woman who's had her role inverted from the kind of traditional, you know, housewife. She's wearing the outfit of, you know, the man, the uniform of the man. But also the reference to the muscles is interesting, because again, that's showing the kind of power and might and physical prowess of the man has also been subverted by the woman. So there's an egalitarian message to it. There's even more so than that. It's that like third wave feminism message of, you know, power over men, put men in cages. You know, you don't need a man with this powerful, strong woman.
What's interesting is that this same message is weaponized across the attack of vectors of the progressive stack, isn't it? It's like, well, you know, first it's women against men, then it's like black people against white people, and you know, each one of them is weaponized in this way, and it has the same underlying logic. And they're all in motion at the moment. Every single one of them is in like a collision course to God knows where. That's another thing that really interests me. The more I've read about this, and I'm talking about stuff written in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, where all of this stuff was discussed, but was seen as being kind of lunatic at the time. And yet we've ended up literally with the things they were talking about back then being mainstream, being kind of like part of everyday politics. So I do wonder where I just find it interesting that the origins of it are meant to be something for like, you know, self-defense or something for the defense of a way of life or whatever. That's how it was sold. But I actually wonder whether it was always designed as a kind of, you know, as you talked about Panama, the checkmate of liberalism on the entire world.
Well, I mean, it's a very effective way to change the mindset of an entire hemisphere of women, you know. Never let a crisis go to waste.
Yeah. One of the interesting kind of trajectories to follow is, as I was saying, what happens in each of those independence movements once the British Empire dissolves, and who are the actors involved in those agitating, and then what propaganda techniques are used on those populations to get them behind, you know, let's say Gandhi or whoever, because the idea that they're all just organic is not true. Spoilers. And it feels to me that the all of this that we're seeing here was the, I guess, like the dry run, like the banner case, the prototype, which is then rolled out again and again and again across different populations, you know, around the world, until you get to the point where now we have America bombing Syria because anybody know what's Assad done? Like, why are we bombing Syria? Anyone?
Insert
man bad.
Yeah, well, it's just insert generic terrorist thing happening. It's just all rubbish.
Come on now, AA. You mustn't be a Neville Chamberlain.
Oh, well,
don't appease the dictators, AA.
Yeah. All right, so let's carry on. Responsibility and character, U.S. Army.
Yeah, I put this in there because this is just like so different to the kind of advertising you see today for like both the UK and the US Army. You know, just even mentioning responsibility as a worthwhile and an important facet of you know, being a man and being you know, having as part of a job, and also character. You know, it's not even about necessarily like strength or bravery. It's about you know, taking responsibility for your actions and being this, again, heroic feature. So I really liked this as a notion, and again just shows how far we've gone.
Let's just pretend though, Pharaoh, that you know, my tweet does trigger the next world war. You know, the great war over the calendar is fought. Okay, let's just pretend. I think very quickly you'd see all of the nonsense go away, and you'd see stuff like this come back, because now you're asking people to go out and fight and die. So if there was ever a return to a war that required most of the population, you'd see a change in the messaging, I believe. But I could be wrong. I mean, what's the messaging around the pandemic being like?
Save the NHS.
Thank you, NHS.
Save your God. It's interesting. They do use the language of heroism, don't they, actually? But it's a different kind of heroism, where, again, it's not... And again, yeah, I guess you could say, again, it's responsibility that... maybe there's truth to that. I think there is a really interesting questions about are people shaped by the propaganda, or is it a combination of both, or is it the other way around? Do people shape the propaganda? And obviously, you know, these guys are trying to get them to, you know, show these characteristics. But can you make a responsible person from a poster? I'm not sure. I think something like this is to appeal to a certain kind of person. If you did this today about you know, character, and like sent it out to, again, Generation Z or below, it wouldn't resonate with many people at all, because they just wouldn't understand the notions behind it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, it's asking something of you. It's asking you to join the US Army and kind of become a better person. It's not saying, you know, here's all the things you'll get if you join. It's just, you know, here's some immaterial virtues that you can apply. It wouldn't really work nowadays, but as you said, but I do think it's, for the time, it's quite a good poster for a certain type of character. And also, I was going to ask Pharaoh, is there a particular reason why they all seem to have this shared kind of scheme of color, with the kind of warm yellows and the greens and the blues?
Yeah, like again, it's all, like I said, it's all down to the kind of artistic heritage that the guys who are making the posters come from. So again, those German posters are very vivid because of the German expressionism, but this very much comes out of kind of more realist art. So again, it's like these very real but idealized figures, everything's soft and with pastels. So it's more to do with the artists and creating that sense of, you know, how like a company has a brand. I think with the propaganda, you need to sort of have a bit of a brand for it to kind of feel. Yeah, exactly. And also, so it feels like, you know, it's all part of the same thing. So I think they just ended up with the kind of color scheme, and then everyone has to kind of stick with it, basically.
I just wanted to mention on the can you hear me, guys? Mm-hmm. Hello, you can hear me. Yeah.
Hello,
you can hear me. Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to mention that something made me think about character the other day, and that was did you see, like, Meghan Markle has been accused of bullying by staff at the palace? this has been like a kind of story that's been doing the rounds, and Markle has reacted by, or an extraordinary attack on my character.
She called them racist, disappointed
to have this attack on my character. Does anybody for a second believe that Meghan Markle wasn't guilty of bullying? She obviously was. I mean, I've never jumped to a conclusion as fast in my life as to believe that Markle is a bully. But it just made me pause to think, well, what does character mean when Meghan Markle says character? What does she really mean by that? Because what are they appealing to in the current year as aspects of good character? And what is the ethical underpinning of it? What is the, what is the kind of moral basis of it? Because really, they have nothing to talk about apart from, are you prejudiced? Are you a racist? You know, that's not really character. That's a stand-in. That's not really morality, is it? It's a kind of nonsense. It's kind of trying to make morality out of basic politeness, which is not not ethics.
Yeah, well, I think they're trying to create a virtue out of, because again, it's not necessarily like being polite. It's interesting how they phrase everything. It's not about being not racist. It's about being anti-racist, an active effort to stop racism, if that makes sense. So I feel like they're creating these active things one has to do to be seen as virtuous. So I think you're right. The sense of character has gone from this idea of responsibility, integrity, heroism to basically being seen to do specific things in society which are anti things that they don't like, basically.
Something that would greatly help efforts in race relations is if people weren't given a reason to dislike the actions of certain groups, which comes down to responsibility and character. We mentioned racism, but how much of it comes down to just clean your room and paint your bloody fence, tidy your garden?
Well, no, don't do those things. Don't do those things, because then you can't consume the next fence or buy the next garden. Don't have a sort of sentimental attachment to anything, eh?
So I feel like at the ground level, that really does what it comes down to, though, is groups of people not willing to, not willing or able to maintain a certain standard in a certain area. People on the ground get resentful of it. And then they're not allowed to voice their resentment because reasons. So I do think responsibility and character are probably at the heart of many of our issues. So this one's been put in the bin. Let's have a look at this one. Don't take chances with pickups. Loose women may be loaded with disease. What's this all about?
Well, after we saw from the First World War posters, the amorous nature of the American caused lots of problems regarding venereal disease. But I love the so this is obviously just kind of like the kind of a coquettish winking woman at you. She's beautiful, but is she as deadly as a loaded gun? But then I love there's like a V for victory, and then there's like the VD for venereal disease as well. It's a pretty terrible poster, but it's made me laugh.
Is this an oblique reference to the well-known carryings on that happened when many American soldiers came to these shores and shacked up with there was many a cheating wife in the 40s, that was well known because their husbands were away. You've heard of that, right?
It's also historically, just when any time an army is stationed anywhere in any country for any reason this becomes a problem, because hundreds of thousands of men sat around for months with nothing to do, they tend to want to indulge in certain things. So yeah, this does become a problem. And I mean, sorry to kind of go off topic slightly, but just because it's sort of amusing on this point. The German army occupying France in the war suffered very badly with this, because the French actually organized brigades of women who were infected with all sorts of diseases to go out and seduce German troops. And they managed to get a severe spread of all sorts of horrible things through the German camps by screwing them.
one of the interesting test cases I always remember reading about this, I remember where I read it now, but it was a kind of anthropological, sociological study of Captain Cook and his men. What happened when they rocked up? And, you know, they believed Cook was a god, you know. And they had whoever those natives were on those Cook Islands, all of the women basically just offered themselves to Cook and his men. So there is this kind of strange phenomena that goes on, where if women believe that the social status of the men coming in is above those of the kind of home troop, this will go on. So I do wonder if British women had kind of figured out, hold on, there's a new superpower here. You know, clearly the Americans are above our British lads now. We're gonna switch. There is this, I don't know what they call it, but it's a kind of like an inbuilt disloyalty of the female, of female humans.
It is an old trope, even going back to sort of classic literature and ancient myths, this idea of the women opening their legs for the invaders. Though what to make of it, I'm not really sure. I mean, the Americans coming over to Britain, one thing that really drew the British women to the Americans more than anything else was the fact that after years of rationing and the depression and hunger and the lack of anything sort of luxurious, the Americans brought over material goods in abundance. You know, they brought over tons of clothes and chocolates and foods and alcohol, you know, all these sort of luxuries that people in Britain had been missing. And I think I think that played a very major role in the willingness of these women to give something back, shall we say, to the Americans.
So, I mean, I do think there is something to that disloyalty kind of thing that I was talking about. It's got something to do with survival, of course, as well, though, because don't forget, in different times, I mean, imagine Genghis Khan and his crew are coming to town. You know, you've got limited survival options if you're a woman in those.
Well, yeah. What are you going to do?
I mean, it could be a kind of fight or flight thing as well. All right, so let's carry on. Someone talked. Looks like Ryu from Street Fighter.
Anyway, I really like this one, just artistically, because again, it's just kind of like, it's a powerful message. You know, again, it's black and white, so it really stands out to you. The pointing finger is going to attract the attention as you're walking by, and the eye gazing directly at you. So, it's really aimed for that shock tactic, but I think it's more effective than the previous one that we saw of the parachute regiment, or should I say the chicken nuggets. You know, I think this is a strong poster. So.
Yeah, good.
I feel like we're going to end up with a few memes of this one somehow. It's the energy of the sailor, you know, being drowned in the middle of the dark sea, you know, pointing it not quite at you, but at somebody behind you. That's what's interesting.
That's
about
true, actually. That's a good point, actually. Yeah.
They've managed the perspective very well. He could be pointing at you. He's sort of looking at you, and it's sort of that accusatory thing. But he's not quite pointing at you. I like that.
That should be a deepest lore meme. How did this new person get in? Someone talked.
Every time we get raided.
Okay, let's carry on. Help stop this. Buy WSS and keep him out of America. National War Savings Committee.
So again, this is more German dehumanization. Again, the idea of the kind of German brute. You can see his hunched over shoulders. His arms and legs are too long for his body. He's holding a knife covered in the blood of his victims. You can't see his face, but you can see it's kind of ugly and brutish. So again, just like the Japanese one we saw beforehand, the Americans were not afraid of totally dehumanizing their enemies.
Is he wearing a World War One? That's a World War One uniform and helmet, isn't it?
It's the stereotype, yeah, of the pickle helmet wearing German.
So they're still living off World War One propaganda here.
Well, that's what I was going to bring up. Imagine if you were somebody that lived your adult life through the two wars. You'd be so sick of these posters saying "Buy bonds, stop the German brute," wouldn't you? Because like half the posters we've looked at, this is the angle they go for. it must have worked because you know. This seems to be like the sort of the base level of propaganda poster.
Have there been COVID bonds yet?
We should invent it. That's a good quick rich scheme. Yeah,
buy COVID bonds. Rishi Sunak has bankrupted the nation because half the country's been on furlough for the past year or whatever.
It's interesting. Okay. He extended that to October. You know, I think it does show that they're going to go for a longer lockdown, personally. But anyway, let's not maybe talk about.
Yeah, let's not bring rank punditry into this. Rank punditry. Okay. Soldiers without guns. There they are.
Again, it's just like this is the same slogans that we'll see today at like those feminist marches or whatever. You know that women are modern day soldiers. I'm fighting for freedom in the same way that these women are. It's interesting how, again, the idea is just so powerful that it survived for over 70 years in the consciousness of a nation.
You see, I wonder whether if they tried anything like this today, it'd be difficult, wouldn't it? Right? Because one thing that strikes me about this poster is that they're obviously three white women, right? Today you'd have to make this poster, you know, politically correct. Mm-hmm. But then would it connect with the people it needs to? And this is a genuine question I have. It's like, well, because you're asking people to do something. Okay. You're trying to motivate and persuade. Does it lose its effectiveness when you're trying to hit like, you know, you do the marketing stuff, Pharaoh. You're trying to hit like four different demographic groups who don't really know each other in real life. Can you do it with one poster, or would they have to do like micro targeting today?
Like in the past, everyone was very similar. You know, again, if you look at do you remember those black and white photos we saw of the women coming out of the First World War factory? They're all wearing the same outfits. They all look very similar. Because we're living in the age of hyper individualism, you can't have a single message for everyone, and also because of multiculturalism as well, you have to have 1,000 messages. For example, if you ever watch any kind of TV on demand, so that's like again for the Americans, apologies, but it's like a Channel 4, and you see any of their adverts. You can target by region. And so what you can do is to actually swap out the voiceover for different areas. So again, you can have like a northern person speaking in the north, a southerner for the south, etc. So you're having to get that unique experience for each of those areas, because there aren't many things which keep us all together these days, sadly. You know, there isn't, again, maybe it is the final thing, which is the mythology of World War II, you know, something like Churchill is a true unifying message. And that's why I think they had to use the quote unquote Blitz spirit for COVID, because that's one of the last true global messages.
Has worked though, hasn't it? Sadly.
Yeah, but that's all they've got. You can't keep using it. This is the thing, what else is there? What else holds us together as a nation, you know, in terms of symbols and icons? You can't have, you know, the three lions. You can't have Nelson,
the rainbow flag. I certainly get a swell of pride when I see the rainbow flag. You know, Sadiq Khan, he's a figure of unity, isn't he?
God. I mean, the other Joe problem Biden. Is that...
When I see Joe Biden, I swell with pride. My heart swells with the fact that we live through an era, Farah, where we've defeated fascism. Again. This was our World War III.
I mean...
And anyway, carry on.
Yeah. But, like, the other trouble is, of course, if you had to go around and convince modern Americans that they were going to fight for America, like, you'd basically be stuck. You'd have all your regular sort of patriot types. But, I mean, who are they going to fight for? They're going to fight for Biden, you know? And what's the name of that woman that sort of controls him? You know, the VP.
Kamala Harris.
Yeah, are you going to fight for her? You know, is this America? Are you going to go and do that? Are you going to go and fight in the Middle East or whatever? You know, it's like, and then of course you've got all the sort of anti-American types and people, and all the sort of you know, racial minorities who apparently you know that, well, we can't fight for America. It's a terrible racist system that keeps us down. You know, what are we going to fight for that for? So, you know, who would join this army that you need to get together to do something nowadays?
It may be an issue for them, you know, because you know, that there was a question about the they were starting to do purity tests in the army late last year, I recall. But like, you need the fighting men to be on side.
Of course. I mean, so, you know, it's very progressive to put women on the front lines of the army, but you know, there's a reason that we've avoided that for nearly 2,000 years of human history, and even more, you know. And the other thing is, of course, you know, what percentage of America now is obese or otherwise unfit to fight wars or you know, to handle that? You know, what are you going to do when? I mean, I suppose now it's less of a worry, of course, because they're the sort of, for the time being, they're still the hegemon, and their ideology is hegemonic, and they can sort of push power via other means. But at some point, you know, war's going to come knocking, isn't it? And what the hell are they going to do?
Yeah. Now, I hate to do this, but do you ever play that game like Shag, Marry? What was it? What's the third one? I think you have to kill one.
Oh.
Who would you marry? Who would you kill? And who would you just have a one-night stand with? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, Mary, bottom left, she looks probably the most wholesome. She's wearing this kind of frumpy lace top, probably a secretary. That's great. Can annotate my thoughts and notes. And then kill the other two.
No, you have to have a one-night stand on one of them.
Very, very high-level content here today.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Let's carry on. I won't make you play it, Hat.
Thank you very much, AA. Yeah. just dunk poor Pharaoh in that. What about you?
Dunno, I'm looking at her.
Yeah, I was looking at her. I think maybe marry the one in the middle, snog the one on the left, and do away with the one on the right.
We're all agreed that she'd be trouble.
Yeah.
She's the one to get rid of. Yeah. Okay. Let's carry on.
Now we all have VD.
Yeah, indeed. We shouldn't. Keep pitching with both hands, brother. Oh my God.
I just saw this and it just made me. It's like, this was the worst poster I found.
My God. Oh, someone. That's pretty harsh. Keep pitching with both hands, brother.
I mean, it's meant to be kind of like, you know, just keep, you know, hang on in there. But I think they just totally misses the mark and is just brutal. I mean, just look at his face. His face sums it up. If you can get a zoom in, it's kind of like, what are you doing by my bedside talking about baseball? My hands are literally blown off.
Nothing but a flesh wound. Just a flesh wound.
I don't really. How is this encouraging people to fight? You know, oh, look at this man whose hands blown off.
This is the worst. This is the worst propaganda post.
I'm reminded of that Monty Python sketch where they visit the guy's tent. You know, they're in some colony in Africa, and the guy's had his leg bitten off by a tiger. He's
a
like,
tiger
oh, no,
in Africa.
I'll be fine. Don't worry. Anyway, that's pretty.
But what is the, like, how is this encouraging people? This is encouraging people to stay home, surely. You know, don't go and lose your hands.
Yeah, exactly. They totally missed the market. I think it's meant to be kind of like, they're probably put up in the hospital, just kind of like, you know, just keep hanging on there. But it's just terrible.
Horrible. Yeah,
in the top right, it just says U.S. official poster, U.S. Army official poster.
The first thing I thought when I saw this, would if you used it today, everyone would go, well, how the hell am I supposed to scroll through Twitter if I lose my hands in the war? I'm not going to go fight for that, you know.
Dig for plenty, grow good in your garden, or get an allotment.
Yeah, I mean, and this is just interesting comparing this to some of the British ones, because again, Britain destroys America in terms of like at home propaganda. But I mean, this is perfectly fine. You know, dig. You know, it's all about encouraging people to create vegetable patches in their gardens, so that you're not having to rely on, you know, food that's going to be sent across to the soldiers. But again, it just doesn't quite work in terms of a picture. It's just a box full of veg, isn't it?
I think it's quite good. I actually, to confess, I have a couple of these dig for victory style posters, because I've always quite liked the idea of having a little veg garden. it's just kind of cool to me. I don't know.
Be a good advert for a local harvest festival, perhaps.
Yeah. Also, it's very sort of trad in a sense that it's weirdly anti-corporate, you know, in a sense. Like, it's not saying give your money to, you know, go and work in the factories or give your money to the government to fight the war. It's saying just make your own food, which is wholesome, you know. It's everybody should be doing that if they can, you know, whether there's war or not. You know, have a little patch of vegetables or do a tiny bit of sort of, I don't know, farming. Just you know, it's good.
I like playing that game. I've been playing a game recently called Littlewood, but it's a bit like Stardew Valley. You know, keep a nice little garden, grow some carrots, you know, peaceful. I've been enjoying that. The premise is that the world's already been saved. It's an RPG, but everything's safe. All the monsters are gone. So now it's just time to build the village and, you know, grow some carrots and mine a little bit, chop some trees down. I like those games. What do they call them? Crafting games, I guess. Anyway, let's carry on. What are you going to do about it? Stay on the job until every murdering Jap is wiped out. Again,
I kind of like this. I kind of like the energy here.
Again, just I love the depiction of the Japanese guy as just this super buck tooth. Like just totally distorted like mask of a face there. And again, it's kind of like using dovetailing with the press as a propaganda tool. You know, the press is releasing stuff about how, you know, stuff, you know, the Japanese cruel treatment of soldiers. But again, it's interesting how the government and the press working together for specific aims. And again,
and I do think the legacy of this idea that the Japanese are, like, underneath everything, quite cruel, has lived on. You know, I think you talk to someone long enough, you'd be like, yeah, but, you know,
I mean,
cruel in the war mind.
You know? I would say, objectively, the Japanese were particularly cruel out of all the countries that fought that war. And I mean, Pharaoh, I hope you've included some of the other caricatures that the Americans put out of the Japanese, because they are. You know, worth looking at just for the sort of, I don't know, for the meme value, I suppose, just sort of however they are.
We had one at the start. I think there may be one later as well. Yeah.
That's good. I mean, just the kind of, I just like, this is my favorite so far. Just, I think out of all the posters we've looked at, like in the entire series so far, this is it, because it's just so like high energy. Like, it's like, stay on the job until every murdering Jap is wiped out, you know?
I mean, it's tapping into a bit of old friend friend good, enemy bad type of territory, isn't it?
Also, it's you know, it's literally. I know that the whole thing about oh, you know, the press being the arbiters of truth, but I think it is an effective poster because they've included that newspaper headline. People have probably already seen, you know, and it's like, look, this isn't just like a bit of propaganda. This is objective truth, you know. This is what they're doing, you know, dirty murdering Japs, go and kill them all. And like, that is effective propaganda, I think. I think this would get men queuing up at the recruiting station.
Can someone clip that line, please, from Panama there? That'd be great.
Don't do that. Don't get me banned.
Carry on. Dr. Zeus has been cancelled for this sort of thing, I'm just saying. They've got the guts. Back 'em up with more metal.
Yeah, so I quite like this one because, again, the Americans really ramp up the heroism in their posters. Again, think back to the First World War where it's, again, you know, it's liberty with a sword fighting. And it was only that poster with the, the kind of cavalry ghosts, if you remember, I thought that it was relatively heroic. But there's quite a few of these quite good American posters where, again, you've got this figure who's, again, another paratrooper with a Tommy gun, firing, he's got a great powerful pose, and you know they've got the guts. It's these brave guys, and then the call to action here is back them up with more metal. So again, there's the metal of the gun, the metal of the bullets. Giving them metal is going to help them do their job. So again, this is one of my more favorite posters for me.
I mean, frankly, if I had to look at another here's some innocent woman and children, go and give your money to the state, you know, please buy bonds, I would scream. You know, I'm so glad that we finally got some, you know, some propaganda with a capital P, you know. You know, let's do some fighting, you know, that sort of thing. It's much more, well, at least to me, it's much more responsive than hand over your cash.
Can you guys hear me? Sorry.
This
reminds me of an Alex Ross DC Comics front cover, you know, something about the art style. It's kind of photorealistic. You know, if anybody knows any Alex Ross artwork, but because it's kind of that hyper real style, isn't it, in the art? So, yep. Let's move on. Salvage scrap to blast the Jap. Occupy. And then there's the American Eagle literally bombing the snake.
It's interesting. It gives, again, like in terms of depictions of the Japanese, the snake, the buck-tooth snake is one that's quite common. Again, if you try and zoom in on the face of the snake, you can see the teeth kind of poking out in front of it. So again, it's quite a clever sort of sneaky dehumanization again.
They've retooled that from World War One. I remember that snake wearing a fez at one point. Do you remember?
That is the Ottoman snake. Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah.
The Ottoman snake. Do you remember? So there we go. What do you like? Do you like this one, Panama?
I do. Doesn't quite have the same energy as the other ones, but I do like it. Particularly, I love the depictions of the Japanese because they all have that, so the teeth, they tend to have glasses and the little hat. You know, it's a good iconography, I think, and it's rather unfortunate that the Japanese got their kind of aesthetics so kind of straight before the war, because it made them very easy to caricature. You know, you either have the sort of the emperor, or you have the kind of official with his little sort of wing collar and top hat and glasses, and then you have the kind of troops, you know, with their buck teeth and an evil face. You know, I think the Japanese, unfortunately, are just sort of too easy to caricature like that.
I feel like this could be memed, this snake. I'd like to make the Mr. D memes out of it, and you could just change what that is. You know, you could have you could change occupied territory with Panama hat. Have that as a Mr. D meme, you reckon?
All right. I'm going to say anything about that.
Bring him home sooner. Join the waves. You know, here we go. More of this.
Yeah, well, I thought it was more. This is more of a sympathetic than, again, the, you know, he's going away. You need to fill his job. This is more about, you know, this heartfelt moment of goodbye. Again, this is all about memory. You know, this the poster is to the woman, right? And it's almost kind of like, do you remember the time you said goodbye to your loved one as he went off to, you know, fight the Japs in the Pacific? But now you can bring him home faster by joining the waves. So again, I think it's really clever because it taps into those subconscious memories, but also like a positive emotional thing, as opposed to the men have gone, you need to replace them.
One of the stronger efforts, I reckon. This one's pretty good. Good message. Trad message. I mean, clearly, though, I reckon they, even within America at that time, they probably had different demographic groups they were trying to target Pharaoh.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, again, America is a very segregated country in terms of, like, just in terms of where people live, in terms of ghettoization, and it always has been. So you need to do that for sure.
Hang on, then. Let's have a look. Dishonest chin. Dishonest. I wonder though, if she's been up to no good while he's been away. Don't trust them.
She reminds me of the sort of Edwardian era Gibson girl a bit. It has a vibe of sort of being like an older style of poster, I think, although at least the art style is. And I think it's quite clever the way they've turned the woman's face to the viewer, so that it's sort of saying to all the women that are missing their men, you know, this is you. This is you, the kind of beautiful, pure, sad woman who's missing her man, but the man is turned away. So he becomes the sort of everyman that every woman is missing, if you see what I mean. So the target of the poster is individualized, but the kind of object of the poster is not dehumanized, but de-individualized, I suppose. It's much more effective that way.
I'm still not sure. I reckon she's been playing away. Let's carry on.
She has VD.
Oh my God, look at this. This was an official US Army poster. So what do we make of that one?
What I like about it, there's a kind of a raw strength to it. It's just a raw brutality. Oh, you're skipping ahead now. There we go.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
And I like that he's just kind of like, he's rolled up his sleeves. You can tell he's taken his jacket off. Uncle Sam's got the wrench and he's going to beat the Japs with the wrench.
I love that. He's got a wrench. He hasn't got a gun or a sword or something. He's got a wrench.
Has anyone tried to like update this with, you know, that being Joe Biden, Assad, you're next.
Don't do it.
Don't
even meme it. I mean, I suppose Turnip would be able to explain this to us here, but why is Uncle Sam always depicted as being an old fellow? Why is he sort of, because you'd think with America, the whole thing of them being, you know, sort of a young country and all that sort of, but Uncle Sam is always sort of quite sort of wizened, you know. Is there any reason for that, do you know?
Yes, I mean, I don't think the Americans like to think of themselves as young, quote unquote. There's an awful lot of founding father worship and stuff in American mythology.
Liberal tradition, so, I suppose.
Yeah, like within their own, you know. Yeah, you're right about that. I mean, I think because.
Oh. Hello?
I think he's gone.
Sorry. I said, let's face it, America's a bit of a made-up nation, isn't it? It's not real yes. Country. So I do think that they've always had to lay on their national mythology and mythos a bit thick, you know. So these emblems, these kind of the likes of an Uncle Sam and, you know, or is it Lady Columbia?
Mother Columbia.
Yeah, or you know, they have to take their icons more seriously, because otherwise they're just a kind of collection of ragamuffins, you know, on Native American soil.
Right.
So you have to. They have to talk about these things much more. I mean, I don't know though. Maybe I mean, we'll see when we get to the British propaganda. But I feel like the the mythos is a bit thin in the American case. So, you know, they have to make their figures a bit more grandiose. That could explain why he's an older chap. I don't know. What's this? Bit of careless talk. Are the pieces are pieced together by the enemy?
I sort of like this because it sort of reminds me of like the kind of mastermind style. You know, this could be the front of a jigsaw or a game, but obviously it's kind of like these kind of evil connotations. I also like the kind of sinister Blofeld-esque kind of gray jacket and ring. You know, it's almost like he's part of some kind of secret organization, but then the fact he's a Nazi is revealed through the super obvious ring. So
I can't believe somebody is in the chat saying I want that ring. No, you don't. You don't want that ring. Okay, let's carry on. Booby trap, syphilis, and gonorrhea. So they were really onto this don't play away business. She's been set up by this sneaky chap back here. See him? He's put her up to this. Yeah, because I bet there was a lot of action for the American lads away, as we were talking about. But she could be a German spy, for all you know. She's a spy.
Gone, but
let's carry on. Clear the way. The engineers of the United States Army. Corps of the engineers.
I just really love this, again, for its kind of heroic and epic nature. So you've got this kind of guy who's you know, in this kind of power pose, almost like the Colossus of Rhodes, high above these kind of tiny troops beneath him. And again, you can see the water represents the kind of they're under artillery fire. He's got his, like, he's holding the entire rifle just in his left hand. He's got his entrenching tool that he's going to club someone to death with in a second. I just think it's a very epic and inspiring poster. Just pretty good.
Yeah, I'm beginning to realize that this DC cover artist, Alex Ross, probably got his style from these World War II posters, because it's so uncannily similar that I've got to believe that he was inspired by exactly these posters. Only this would be Superman or something standing astride here rather than a... this one's quite good. I mean, it still feels to me that they're hitting many different types of people in the American public here, hoping to see what sticks.
Anybody else getting sort of Team Fortress 2 vibes from this one?
I did actually, my mind did go to different classes in computer games, you know, because an engineer is quite a specialized military unit, isn't it? And there he is with his hammer. So
also, just the historical context. I mean, the core of engineers in the war arguably was like, if you imagine the US with their kind of, you know, just sheer might of industry, you know, the amount of it of tanks and trucks and guns they can make in a day that's just going to crush their enemies. You can't do that without mechanics and engineers. There was an anecdote, I think it was Erwin Rommel, whose car broke down when he was in Germany once during the war, and they were near a prisoner of war camp full of some Americans, and he went to the German troops and said, anybody of you know how to fix a car? They all went no. And he turned to the Americans and he said in English, any of you know how to repair a car? Every single one of these like random American conscripts like put their hand up, and he just said, we're not going to win. this is doomed. This is absolutely doomed.
I'm reminded there was this old set of kind of tactical, kind of strategic games called Commandos. Anybody ever play those? I want to say there was an engineer in that. That's a kind of world. They're great World War II games if you ever play those. Don't know if they work on modern systems now, like Commandos, Commandos 2. I remember there was a sapper, and one of them was an engineer. Kind of reminds me of that as well. All right, let's carry on. In the interest of, we're not going to make it to the British at this point, Pharaoh. We're always too slow. Too much talk of wrestling in the first hour. This man is your friend. English man.
There's been a lot of memes of this one already.
That's amazing. This man is your friend.
I love the teeth. He's got the English teeth, of course.
This is an embodiment of friend-enemy distinction here, though.
Yeah. There's an entire series on this, I think, as well. I think there's a Scotsman and a Welshman too. Let's see if you can find it.
I mean, to be fair, again, I'm just sort of making a guess here, but there was quite a bit of enmity between Britain and America before the war. And the Americans even had, I think it was called War Plan Red, which was the operation for basically taking down the entire British Empire in sort of one strike. If they had to go to war with Britain for whatever reason, so it's possible that they did actually need to say to the American people, the English are on our side, you know, don't fight them.
I mean, this is the weird right. The weirdest thing about history is that once it happens, people have a habit of thinking that things were inevitable. The collapse of the British Empire was not inevitable, and many, many different choices could have been made at different times. Different people could have been put in, you know, the ideas they had, like they basically just decided, right, we're going to give up everything for this. we're going to go down this trajectory and nothing's going to stop us. Basically, they didn't have to do it. And especially when they were in a position of strength, a little bit before this, history could have gone differently. So it's kind of interesting the way it went.
Just on the private chat, I've sent across some more of this type. If you want to have a real quick look, because it's the same idea, but there's some quite funny ones.
So I'm just going to switch up my tab.
This Welshman is your friend.
I couldn't find a Welshman, unfortunately.
Oh well. It's probably not worth the effort to explain to Americans what Wales is.
This man is your friend. He fights for freedom. Ethiopian with a trumpet.
That's quite cool, that one. I like that one.
Hilarious.
Surprisingly you, included Ethiopia.
Did you get the first one? That's my favourite.
Let's have a look. hold on a minute. I have to switch the tab again. this man is your friend, Canadian. He fights for freedom. Is that the one you had in mind?
No, it was the Dutch guy, actually, but that's still pretty good.
I like that one.
Yeah, he's even better. Let's have a look. This man is your friend, Dutch sailor.
just imagine the whole of the Dutch people being represented by this slightly rotund, gawky-eyed sailor.
If anybody's on Twitter, I want people to relentlessly spam Mr. D with that. This man is your friend, Dutch sailor.
Any Dutchman in chat, tell us if this is accurate or not.
I might do it right now. I can't help myself. Oh, it's, damn it.
Jan de Witt there. I think he's Dutch, isn't he?
So, yeah. Let's get back to the main. So what awesome set of that's probably my favourite bit of propaganda.
It's a great campaign. It's a great campaign.
This man is your friend.
this has to be kind of tongue in cheek, though, doesn't it? You know, this can't be 100% sincere, can it?
Well, I'm not sure. Have you seen the World War II like videos of like going around an English pub to introduce Americans to what English pubs are like and stuff? Those are really interesting. And it's kind of like, oh, here's the dartboard, or here's how you should be polite to people, and here's how you buy a round for everyone and stuff. It's very endearing.
Board. Very, very sort of well shot little films, aren't they? They drink their beer at room temperature.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, I definitely recommend if you just search for World War II English pub, American or whatever, I think it'll come up.
So I had to do that. It was too good an opportunity not to
live tweets,
not to spam D with sailor memes. Okay, have I gone off too far?
Yeah. Oh.
We're not going to get to Britain, are we? Let's face it, we're not going to get there.
I've been trying to edit it as well as we go. This is the edited version. The Americans did a lot more posters this time. So,
okay, that is amazing, though, I have to say. Favorites, four favorites.
Yeah.
So this is where the comic books came in. Oh, look, War Bond, literally punching Hitler.
It's literally the classic character, War Bond.
I can't believe they made him a comic book superhero, War Bond. And look at the
Japanese down there.
Look at the Japanese. What's his name? That guy Tojo.
The Prime Minister, Hideki Tojo. The song they're singing is an actual wartime song by I'm trying to think of the guy's name. He was like a wartime comedian called Spike something. He sang a song called In De Führer's Face.
Right, In De Führer. And look, there's Mussolini in the back as well. Mm-hmm. Isn't that Mussolini?
That's Mussolini.
Unshaven, slovenly Mussolini. And there you go. Look how limp-wristed they've made the Führer.
And he's wearing, they've made his outfit almost pink, you know. Again, all of their colours, there's mauve, pink and green. It's like ridiculous outfits. But no, Warbond is the most cursed comic book character ever created, I think.
War Bond. They should bring him back to fight the pandemic.
I'm surprised Capcom haven't squeezed him into a game somehow.
Yeah, I mean, War Bond would be a great pay DLC for Street Fighter V, wouldn't he?
Just to talk about the poster, like I really don't like it. I've never really liked comic books, and like this style of comic book, at least it just grates me. Like it's just too daft, you know. Like it's so absurd. I just you know, 0 out of 10.
So there we go. When you ride alone, you ride with Hitler. Join a car sharing club today. Oh my gosh!
I just love Ghost Hitler. He's just hanging out.
He's just having a ride with this guy. You ride with Hitler.
They should bring this back to de-radicalize the youth. All those horrible YouTubers who've done this to you. You know, when you watch YouTube, you ride with Hitler. You should have that. You should have there's you watching Way of the World or something that's been banned, and then you ride with Hitler. They could bring it back, couldn't they? I mean, let's face it, all the propaganda is still based on this basic idea, as we've been talking about throughout the stream.
The problem with this one is that the guy driving alone, he just looks like an absolute gent. He's in the great car, it's a convertible. Look at the dapper hat and the great suit.
No,
even Hitler's having a great time. This poster totally doesn't work for me.
It's like, of course Hitler would ride with this guy. He's changing the gears for him, like Mark changes the gears for Johnson in Peep Show.
There you go. I mean, it's kind of like this would probably have more of an impact during the time it was set. This idea that, you know, Hitler is so monstrous that he can't really be a figure of fun, you know, during in the 40s themselves. And then, you know, this is you in your car, you know, thinking that you're so cool. And look who's next to you, you know.
I feel like they always make him quite camp. Even this Hitler is a bit kind of,
yeah.
Why is he sitting in such a girlish manner? You know.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, as much as it may annoy some people in the chat, I would say that, you know, Hitler was a bit clownish. You know, but let's be real. What I like about the caricatures of him is that very very often they're more understated than you'd expect, because he kind of was this.
What do you mean the people in the chat? Is there are no Hitler fans in the chat?
You'd be surprised.
If you're a Hitler fan, what are you doing?
We're classical liberals here, don't you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you're gonna get a visit from War Bond. He's gonna come around and show you a lesson.
Yeah, War Bond will. this guy's thinking, "Cool, I'm well dressed. I've got it together. Well, of course, I'd be for the fash." This guy's thinking. So anyway, let's carry on. Americans will always fight for liberty. 1778 1943. There we go. There they are, fighting for liberty.
Yeah, I just put this in the context of, I know, the 6th of, was it February or whatever? You know.
So there we go.
I like the invocation of winter there. The fact they're all in their overcoats and there's sort of a cold breeze blowing. You know, that's quite a nice touch. I think it gives it a bit more power. This idea that, you know, they're sort of hard men. You know, ready to march off and do tough things for the cause. I'd say that's a good poster. I like that one.
So let's carry on. The guy who relaxes is always helping the axis.
Just love this. It's a quality pun. And then zoom in on the axis. Look who it is.
There he is.
Oh, man. No.
The boxing snake.
Oh, I like the idea of weaponizing this as a meme. I don't know why I want to pick on D today, but I want to make this look... obviously I won't send that one to him, but yes, very good. I feel like they've got different propaganda teams, Pharaoh, and this whoever's on this squad is pumping out quality anti-Axis propaganda.
Yeah,
the guy who relaxes is helping the Axis. So, our good Earth, keep it ours, buy war bonds, make every market day bond day.
Sick of it.
Well, I think this is interesting because you should keep this in your mind when you compare it to the German ones, because there is no difference between that and the a lot of the family orientated German.
It's a bit Aryan looking, isn't it?
It's like literally blood and soil, isn't it?
It's the kind of Chad meme, isn't it? This is you. This is you. You are the farmer, and this is what you look like. You know, it doesn't matter what you actually look like. This is you.
It's also a bit Theresa May pilled. Do you remember when she had a?
Come on,
remember when in the weeds?
Do you not remember that
she move went on?
She went on the One Show, and they said, can you tell us something a bit naughty about yourself? And she's like, sometimes I imagine myself running through a wheat field. And that was her attempt to be more human. great lost Prime Minister. One of the all-time greats, Theresa May. Here we go. X marks the spot. Keep them firing. So there we go. Rubs, isn't it? It's a bit childish.
What can we really say about this one? You know, it's pretty straightforward.
Army, United States Army Air Forces, over the ramparts we watch.
Yeah, so I really like this one again, just iconography again. You've got this kind of tremendous, like Superman appearing from the clouds, and just like he sort of represents both the aircraft and also the men inside them. He's looking off into the distance, but up as well. So it's kind of like looking towards the target, looking towards the heavens. I mean, he's literally carrying a huge bomb in his hands, which is quite badass. And then you've got the kind of the detachment of bombers going in for their mission. So I think it's I really like the layout. And then again, you know, over the ramparts we watch again, it's kind of like harking back to you know, tradition and like older. Older generations that would kind of guard.
No, I hate to be all Freudian, but it's a bit phallic, isn't it? It's like he's is he not holding that bomb as if it's his?
I mean, no? I guess Freud would say that it's isn't it? It doesn't reflect the person he's looking at it.
It looks very again. A lot of these look very modern because, of course, the colours because of how, you know, photorealistic they are, but. You know, that could easily be something from 30, 40, 50 years later, just because it, you know, you don't associate this period with people being in full color all the time, do you?
No.
Kind of interesting that, again, the Alex Ross style as well. Telling a friend may mean telling the enemy.
So this is another kind of careless talk, and basically it's showing four different scenes: a soldier telling his girlfriend's telling this other woman, a woman telling another woman, and then it's going to the enemy. But I really like the layout of it. Can you see it's if you just look at the colours, it's red, white, white, red. So it's almost like a alarm checkerboard pattern. You've got telling and then the enemy in full caps there. So again, the idea is careless talk is effectively telling the enemy. I love that there is like the wholesome woman in the top left, who's like the blonde haired and smiley, but then there's evil Nazi woman. He's kind of black haired with like a choker or whatever.
Eyes like closed, untrustworthy eyes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
deceitful mouth. Mm-hmm. But then look at the friend.
The ditzy,
look
at the gossip. Yeah. The gossip, exactly.
Again, I'd love to utilize these memes. Love to utilize these memes somehow.
Mm-hmm. I like the implication that the entire sort of chain of intelligence is broken down by women gossiping. It's all women.
So there we go. This is look at the enemy though. The enemy is quite a challenge.
Yeah, I think it's meant to show that, like, you know, the enemy is powerful. Then they're like, because you've got the kind of angle of them being these kind of buck-toothed Japs and sort of stupid fat Teutons, but then you've got this guy who's sort of, he's a bit of a threat, you know. He's sort of he's like cool looking and Chad, you know. He's sort of like, you know, you don't want this guy, this sort of competent enemy to know all your stuff.
You know, what's one of the things I think about the press sometimes though is like, why are they? The press always demand to know everything all the time. It's like the enemy can read the newspaper, so
mm-hmm.
I don't really understand that element of things. It does happen sometimes when, especially during the Trump era, when they weren't on, when they weren't really playing ball with the power. It's like, well, you're just strengthening the hand of the enemy all the time. Anyway, let's carry on. Save waste fats for explosives. Take them to your meat dealer. What?
But yes, so basically people would save and keep up all of their fats because it's used for, you know, you can turn it to an explosives. You know, like in Fight Club, they take the fat from liposuctions and turn it into soap and explosives for Project Mayhem. But anyway, what I thought was interesting here is if you look at the hand, you can see that it's, I think it's an African-American hand. So again, it's kind of trying to appeal to that specific target audience of basically... Sure.
That's pretty subtle. That's pretty subtle, Pharaoh.
Okay, well, I just wanted to... Because again, all I was saying is that maybe the type of food they're cooking could have a large amount of like fats in. I don't know.
They have a point there, actually. Yeah, you know. Frying a certain type of poultry.
I didn't want to say. But you can see, I like how you kind of literally pouring and turning that fat into this huge explosion where bombs are coming out of. So again, I think in terms of imagery, it's very dramatic and cool.
I like the idea that everybody's got a meat dealer. My mind's automatically taken to these gentlemen, you know, the special stuff. local meat dealer. Anyway, let's carry on. Oh my gosh. Stop this monster that stops at nothing. Produce to your limit. This is your war.
What I love is the wrench again. Americans, do not give Americans a wrench. That's their true
wrench of production. And if anybody's ever played Civilization to the late game, you know how important those spanners are. Mm-hmm. So, and look at the two-headed beast here. The vicious Japanese and the evil Germans. There they are. So, yes.
Very kind of
they punk. May have a grip on the Statue of Liberty and a dagger in their hand, but you've got the spanner of production. It's your war.
So, effective, I think.
It's effective. Was it really your war, though? Let's carry on. 10 years ago, the Nazis burned these books, but free Americans can still read them. Well, can we get a reading list? What were the books that were burned?
Well, again, this was interesting because it was all, you know, I mean, maybe you could have read them, but they weren't exactly common books, were they?
They were, yes, books are interesting books, but it's funny. This isn't something else that I keep on coming across in the history that I've been reading. Is the sheer amount of books that have been banned by the U.S. government over the years.
Oh, yeah.
They are seemingly the biggest burners of books. One book I've been looking at recently, because you know I did the stream on Yokia a few weeks ago. He wrote another book called The Enemy of Europe. Every single copy of that book was destroyed and burned. And there are, you know, FBI records of, you know, the confiscation, seizure, and destruction of, you know, every known copy of this book. They didn't manage to get them all, clearly, because we still have it today. It had to be translated into German and then back out of German again, I think. But the fact of the matter is that they have always engaged in intense censorship of things they don't like. So this meme of the Nazis burning books is kind of interesting, because it never seems to apply. You know, I mean, we're talking in a week where we've seen Amazon delist hundreds of books, right, on Amazon this week. Books that are no longer available, books that you could have bought a week ago. Now, there was one about the trans issue, I seem to remember. It was like a number one bestseller, and now you can't buy it anymore. They've delisted it. So it's kind of interesting how there are two sides to this story of the book burning. But I wonder if anybody did inquire, like, what were the books? This is the Enemy. Pretty good piece of propaganda, I think.
Yeah, I quite like that as well. So again, it's interesting because you don't see that many appeals to religion, but obviously. I just like the background is this kind of almost hell-like red. The dagger has got this blue tint to it as well, and then there's like the yellow of the Bible. So they're kind of mixing the colors really, really well. There's some strong typography at the bottom. This is the Enemy. Simple but effective.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good one. Pretty good. Do you like that one, Panama?
Yes, I think it's very like this probably caused quite a lot of controversy when it came out, I would imagine, because of the implication there, and obviously, you know, America famously kind of, you know, deeply Christian in a kind of Protestant way. So yes, I think that Given the time and the place and everything, it's a very good poster.
They're just trying to hit every angle, see, like, yeah. You know, trying to appeal to any emotion that anybody has in any area to get them on board with this war. Let's carry on. Your victory garden counts more than ever. So there we go, more kind of based and cabbage pilled for you, Panama. I kind of like this one a bit more than the other one. I don't know why.
Yes, it's the kind of the veg is almost kind of flying through the air, isn't it? I think there's something abstract about it, and a little bit more interesting than just like a box of veg. Also, you can almost see. I know it's kind of laid out in a very weird way. Like, why is that? Why is there a gigantic pea pod right in the center? It's not. It's not like. Accurate in again, terms of size, isn't it? So
one can't help but notice the kind of phallic imagery of the giant pea pod like that. It does seem rather too much of a coincidence to just be innocent. I don't know.
So we'll carry on. He volunteered for submarine service.
So again, the classic America Coon poster comes out again. Do you remember the First World War? It was like women swooning over your service. And again, it's even more explicit here, where you've literally got a woman draped over you because you're volunteering for submarines.
I mean, it's pretty weird after like a load of posters saying don't touch women, they all have, you know, VD, and they'll tell the enemy all your secrets, and then it's like, look, if you join the submarine corps, then you'll have women all over you.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's like different campaigns hitting different things at different times. I think probably those ones that were produced don't blab type of thing is probably because there was a genuine problem with people telling their wife stuff, and, you know, it somehow, like, they probably had a genuine issue that had cropped up during the war, I'd imagine, for those later ones to be produced. What's this?
So this is Rosie the Riveter, so it's quite a famous image, and again, it's kind of like, you can see this is one of those powerful, empowered women. You can see she's got her lunchbox, and she's you know, got the words Rosie on it, and there's a riveting gun, so you can rivet plates together. So again, it's quite clever in the fact that it doesn't have to say anything at all. It's just like this, you know, this woman in overall, again, the way that she's eating the sandwich is kind of reflecting that kind of strong woman that we saw before. You got,
well, she's built like a man. Let's just not beat around the bush. She's got arms like a man. Women don't have arms like this.
She's got the hips of a woman there as well. Like, I think they have tried to add in some femininity into it, but you're right. And again,
she's just kind of butch. So that's the trouble.
Yeah, I think she's like a feminist icon or whatever now, isn't she still? So
there we go.
0 out of 10.
Don't even try. She may be a spy. So here's more of this.
This is the original Bobbers meme, basically. I just hate. I think this got the most cursed, like, drawing of people. Like, look at the guy's arm.
He's a very strange character. He's again, you know. If this is meant to be you, though, it's like, what? So, yeah, there we go. Someone talked. It was him. US ship sunk by this guy. This guy. So, yeah, I mean, they must have had a real problem with info at that time. And is that the very last one?
That is the last one.
So we're going to have to leave Britain for next time, I think. Whether it's next week or 2 weeks or whenever we do the next one, we'll have to do Britain. Clearly, these propaganda posters take a long time to get through. But let's hit the super chats. I mean, I'm trying to think of what the best one was before we. What was your favorite one, Panama? What one sticks out to you?
It was the come and wipe out the murdering Japs. That's such a raw piece of propaganda. Absolutely my favorite of the entire thing so far.
What about you, Pharaoh?
Yeah, look, I think you made a really good point. These are different posters for different campaigns and different purposes. But I think that the most effective in my eyes were some of those kind of heroic ones, like the guts and metal one, where again, it's got that dual purpose of showing the kind of heroism of the troops, but also that strong call to it. Yeah, this one was definitely...
So that was your pick. This was Panama's pick.
Mm-hmm.
This was yours, Pharaoh,
yeah.
Or
yeah.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think. I kind of like this character.
So I mean, anything with a snake on, you know, hats off to the, the designers. I mean, and this is a classic. So.
This man is your friend. He fights for right. I think I like that campaign. I quite like this one as well, though, for all the wrong reasons. this one was quite good.
Yeah, it's just in terms of like layout and telling a story, and again getting people's attention is really good. I think
I want to meme it. I want to make like this saffron. This one here. This various people blabbing. You know.
You do it with tweets, though.
I can't think of two other women in the audience. They are around. There's that Laura I can see in the chat. She could be one of them. Yeah. All right, let's carry on. Save waste fats. No, it's the friend one for me. I quite like this one though. Someone tall, this guy, you know. All right, I said the super chats. For me, it was the friend one. This man is your friend.
Englishman.
He is the eunuch in Entropy says, check your Twitter mentions for a laugh, safe for stream viewing. Also, none of the leaders of World War II era are worthy of praise. They all failed us in the Bolsheviks one. So I will just check my Twitter notifications. I will decide if this is safe. Oh, yes. Here we go. Some excellent memes already. Seen this? This man is your friend. He removes midwits. So there we go.
That's pretty good. Brilliant. Yeah, I like that.
I love that.
Not bad, is it?
Fantastic.
So there we go. And the old Bucky, as I can see, the old snake has been taken out. Apparently the Dutch sailor is not coming out for some people. Twitter has decided that tweet I sent John D is not safe, and it's coming out just like this. Let me just show you how it's coming out for people. What?
Interesting. So you know what it is? This is probably like the Dutchies absolutely furious at being depicted.
This man is your friend.
I should say, like, he fights for order and timeliness.
Yeah, fights against confusion and delay. Yeah, indeed. So there we go. Someone caught confusion.
That's great.
These are some excellent efforts from Yiz here. There we go. You have caused confusion and delay. Yes, indeed. Okay, so let's carry on. Yiz also. Oh, Jacob has said, Uncle Sam may be named after Samuel Wilson, but his persona and outfit are taken from Brother Jonathan, the avatar of the most vile corner of the planet, New England. So there we go. And here's the eunuch says, I forgot I can put links in Entropy chat. Top two posts are on my feed. Our memes for today. They're safe to show on stream. So there we go. Yes, thank you very much for that, Liz. Yiz. And now heading over to the other super chats. See what we got in here. Jedi Knight Anakin Cringewalker says, the Romans thought even numbers were unlucky, so they picked February to be the unlucky month. Their months also only had 31 or 29 days. 30 is new. So there we go. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? It was Roman superstition that made February 28.
That's pretty good.
Chris Lutio says, AA, if the tank engines are bought and are the property of the Fat Controller, aren't we then watching slavery in action?
Yeah.
No. It's not a slavery situation. They're trains.
It's a natural hierarchy.
They're the trains.
They're serfs.
Austrian School Swift says, you've completely forgotten the amazing victories in the Burma campaign. They voted the most famous battle in UK history was in that campaign at Imphal.
Oh, yes.
Now, one thing I will say is that the East... So I know people in Mrs. AA's family, like, many of them were posted in like Singapore, Hong Kong. Like there was a whole front... Eastern Front of World War II, where people were posted and so on, that very few people ever talk about, and yet there were lots of people involved in it.
Well, the trouble is with that campaign is, of course, sadly, it's remembered as being sort of like a sideshow, because it was essentially trying to defend India from a Japanese invasion. And it wasn't considered to be as war-winning as the campaign to sort of take, you know, take Europe or Africa, or even, you know, bomb Japan. So it does have that kind of, you know, third man relegation, unfortunately. But I would say it's an absolutely brilliant campaign to read about. And again, you know, I'm not trying to get into the whole World War II myth, you know, oh, weren't the enemy so evil, but I would recommend reading Eric Lomax's The Railway Man, just for a very, very harrowing account of being a prisoner of war under the Japanese, because, you know, it was objectively horrible. You know, I'm not trying to simp for either side.
Yeah. Somebody suggested in the normal chat to get a reading of banned books. I'd be interested to get to pick up some of the ones that the Nazis burned to see what they were about, because that was literally being boasted about in World War II propaganda. But like, what were the books that were? Has anyone ever made a list of the books that were burned by the Nazis?
I heard there's lots of stuff around like transgenderism and psychology and stuff like that that was burned. Basically, a lot of those kind of early understandings of, you know, like basically early gender studies books and stuff like that. And also, well, I know you should, but again, it's not like they were kind of like mainstream books from my understanding, but that's just what I heard. So.
Okay, not Nazi burning book campaign list. What were the books that were banned? What were the books that were burned? Books banned by the Nazi, 70 books. All Quiet on the Western Front. The Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka. Bambi. They banned Bambi.
They banned Bambi.
I thought Hitler was meant to be a big Disney fan. I was led to believe from his depiction of
H.G. Wells, The Time Machine and The War of the Worlds. Frederick Engels, The Condition of the Working Class in England.
Does it say,
is this true?
Does it say why they banned some of these things? Why did they ban Bambi? Weird.
White Fang by Jack London.
What's the source of this?
Goodreads.
Okay, yeah, no.
It doesn't sound true.
Why would they ban White Fang and Bambi and all these sort of, I thought it was going to be like, you know, all these books written by sort of Jewish theoreticians or something, or, you know, just like straight up leftist stuff, you know.
Albert Einstein's theory of relativity was banned by the Nazis. What? Sigmund Freud's The Interpretation of Dreams.
Well, that's good.
The basic writings of Sigmund. These books weren't banned. I'm dubious of this.
The Freud question. Ones were banned, I'm sure, because again, I heard that a lot of psychology and stuff like this is considered.
Are these books that were banned, or books that they encouraged people to burn? Because I know that there were books you could own, but that you were just encouraged not to read, basically.
Apparently, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World was banned, which is ironic.
Yeah.
How to Become a Socialist by Helen Keller was banned by Hitler. Magnus.
That just sounds cringe.
However, the book burnings that we know about were actually organized by the German Student Union in 1933. On the 6th of May 1933, the German Student Union organized an attack on Magnus Hirschfeld's Institute of Sex Research.
Yes, that's
the library and archives, including about 20,000 books and journals, were hauled out publicly.
The stuff that's in there, again, it's just the stuff we're living through today. So,
students never change.
Well, no. But what I'm saying is that the books in that library were not good books. So, yeah.
Yeah, I can't really get a decent list of the books that were burned. I think because it was just kind of like whatever was in that library, you know.
Yeah.
So who knows?
I'm just trying to think where I was. There was an entire like show or documentary that I've seen about it. I'll see if I can remember and send it on Twitter later.
The thing is, though, is that it wasn't as if Hitler kind of ordered them to go and do it. They did it spontaneously, you know.
Yeah.
Much like the students today, you know, do this sort of stuff. It was a kind of a spontaneous, you know, it was not at gunpoint type thing. It was done by students. So that's something that I think is commonly not understood about, you know, in the popular mythos, it's as if he ordered it, but it was actually done by, you know, a bunch of SJWs, mm-hmm. Nazi SJWs. Yeah, I can see Einstein and Sigmund Freud were part of that collection, apparently. So that's where some of these come from. But we don't really have many details list. It's the same few books coming up again and again. So there's a bit of a lack of detail there.
I think this whole article has been AstroTurf. They probably just found like what were the most popular books that maybe accidentally got booked as part of the library, and then have said, oh, look, yeah, they've burned Bambi, or they've burned H.G. Wells. Like, I'm sure that no one really cared either way about H.G. Wells, and they were burning it for other reasons, and they just burnt a lot. But
I would not trust that list.
No.
I want people who are into this to find me that list, that it must exist. And if it doesn't exist, I want to know why, given how famous they are. Surely, I mean, the Nazis were incredibly anal about everything. They didn't make a list. Of course, they made a list. You're on the list.
It's what they're famous for.
They must have made a list.
Well, so, speaking about that, yeah. Panama was thinking of was posting the idea of maybe doing a stream on my channel about the art of Hitler, but also like what art did he have for his personal collection versus what did he ban and show publicly? Because again, I think there's an interesting difference between his personal taste versus what he projected for the country as well.
Yeah, you know what's quite funny? Somebody's mentioned Lady Chatterley's Lover in the chat. I can't remember which book it is, but Peter Hitchens has a rant about Lady Chatterley's Lover as being like the beginning of the end. Like it should have been maintained. Hitchens says somewhere, which is one of his more reactionary views, I would say.
It's also just a pretty mediocre book. I was quite sort of upset when I got a copy of it at like sort of 15 and cracked it open, and then it was just really dull and quite mediocre.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember where it is that Hitchens makes that argument, but occasionally he adopts positions that are just off the map reactionary. Because I'm not even sure that Hitler and his friends would have banned Lady Chatterley's Lover. it's kind of weird. I think he laments it as a kind of got us down the gateway of thinking, like, you know, of this kind of cheap scandalism type stuff. I mean, I can see there's a whole interview on it. Peter Hitchens on Lady Chatterley's Lover in the 60s. So there we go. It's like a 40-minute interview. So you can check out that in your own time. Let's carry on. Chris Duccio says, AA, what are the strengths and weaknesses of the cathedral?
Pretty broad question.
Yeah, it's a bit much to get into now, but I mean, the strengths of the cathedral are its ability to coordinate action without actually coordinating it. Its ability to control information, its ability to brainwash millions of people. I mean, these are all strengths of the cathedral, right? Its weaknesses is that it does seem to lack self-awareness a lot of the time. It doesn't seem to, especially recently, the cathedral seems a lot more brittle than it used to be. It used to be a lot more kind of robust and anti. It feels very fragile and weak to me at the moment.
Its weakness is the people that it has.
Yeah, well, exactly. It rests on these kind of traditionally elite nodes of power, right? And I think a lot of its problems come from the fact that the people who have their hands on those levers today are not of the same caliber of, you know, the people who were controlling the propaganda back in World War II, for example. I mean, I've talked about Edward Bernays before. I don't know if he was involved in World War II efforts, Pharaoh. I'd be surprised if he wasn't in some way. But, you know, there's a long way between him and, like, your typical Vox journalist today, you know. Not a Scholar says, just want to shill Pharaoh's channel. He has good content and the voice of an 18-year-old. List more and offer fresh translations of Danish symbolists. So there we go.
Thank you.
Not a Scholar says that. Chris Lutio says, and that his channel is in the show notes. I think I link it. Do I not?
Yes, you do, sir.
Chris Lutio says, AA, why not have 13 months with 28 days each? Also, why do we have days named after Old Norse gods still? Who designed the system?
Who is this? Yes, indeed. Who is this filthy rationalist down there? You know, let's redesign the calendar arbitrarily and have, you know, 10 hours in a day or whatever, you know.
Didn't Cromwell try to redesign the calendar? I feel like...
I don't know about Cromwell, but I know they did in France after the Revolution.
I think the Puritan... I'm pretty sure I seem to remember something about 13 days being lost or something. There are 13 days that the Puritans like added on. Can't remember what it was now. Something to do with their distaste of feast days or something. Somebody will have to jog my memory there. But there was something something about the calendar... I know that whole period of the interregnum was retconned in some way, in the way that the history was recorded as well, due to Puritan interference in the calendar. Antley Zufarin says, tell someone 100 times you are a dog, and on the 101st, that person will bark. One of the basic lessons taught in any worthwhile propaganda school. Yeah, no, I don't know. I need to review it before we try to share it on a stream, Pharaoh. But there is an interview with one of Goebbels' propaganda kind of minions, like a half hour thing.
Yeah.
That we might review it like during the World War II section, just to see what their philosophy and insights were. I think that's kind of interesting. You know, would you be up for that?
Yeah, definitely.
Utiz4321 says, growing up in America and German camps are the main point of remembrance of World War II. One HS year, we had four different classes that had a German camp section. Yeah, I mean, it's deeply embedded in all sorts of ways. I mean, I remember somebody did a project on how Shakespeare is taught and how race in Shakespeare is approached by the national curriculum in this country. And it's kind of interesting because the two big plays are Othello, of course, and Merchant of Venice. And race talk in Othello is played down by the curriculum, believe it or not. And other aspects of the play are talked up. Whereas in Merchant of Venice, it's kind of pushed into talking about the Holocaust, which is kind of a bit of a strange way of getting around to that topic, right? Within the confines of English literature, but it's almost unavoidable in the education system. I mean, I did history GCSE and A level, and I mean, I feel like we did the Nazis like five times or something. What about you guys in your education? How many times did you do this period of history?
Just GCSE history for me.
Weirdly enough, we had this weird thing where we learned from sort of primary school up to GCSE, kind of from the Celts all the way up to the First World War. And then we skipped the actual First World War and then spent about 3 years doing Versailles and the Depression and learning about how, you know, Herbert Hoover was a laissez-faire advocate, and then FDR came and fixed everything, weirdly. So I think maybe that's when the POS stuff really came in, you know, it was right around that time for me. I don't know.
Years has Yiz has sent me another meme on my entropy, which I'm afraid I cannot share, Yiz. Too spicy, I think. You just don't mind says, please do a Bob Dylan Subterranean Homesick Blue stream AA. Put a critical lens on his lyrics, a mirror for hypocrisy of our era, masters of war, etc. Yeah, I mean, I can do a Bob Dylan Deepest Law. I think it would have to be many streams long, though. He's got a very long career with distinct phases, and if I did it, I'd have to do it properly. DRT is King says, I'm not against doing it. DRT is King says, Uncle Sam was an actual dude, and supposedly the first Uncle Sam poster was based on that dude during the War of 1812, and it has just stuck. Wow, what do you know? Bit like Uncle Ben, right? Uncle Ben was a real man. Do you know the story of Uncle Ben, Farrah?
No.
He was a waiter where the marketing execs, went for their lunch, and they liked the look of him. So they said, can we use your image to put on our rice? And stuck until he was cancelled randomly last year. So, Mott Fishflake says the Irish diaspora in America has always been Irish anti-English. Of course they have. Irish Americans funded the IRA with millions of dollars. That pro-English propaganda was needed in some communities is not surprising. Yeah, that's a very good point. And of course, English, the English were a traditional enemy for the American regime in general, from their foundation, if you think about it. So yeah, it's not surprising. Cows says, this cow is your friend. Well, thank you, Cows. Belfarus Knight says, can we get banned books, US versus Germany? I'm curious on what the American hates. I probably don't trust any theories from them. I mean, there have been tons and tons of books banned by the Americans over the years. Usually ones that are on the other side of things, And Cow says, how much did the Holocaust? Oh, I see what you're doing there. Look, Cows, with your puns, I see you. I just don't find them funny. All right.
Nothing wrong.
Anything to mention before we get out of here?
We just finished our second part of the symbolist analysis on my channel, and Panama's there as well. So if you're interested in art and learning about a group of artists you've may not have heard of before, check it out. And this week is another Foundations of Architecture podcast on Sunday. So tune in at around 8:30.
And Panama, you've got anything you want to mention?
Really nothing at the moment. I'll upload a video sometime in the next few, probably next week, I would think, talking about the errors of democracy. But that's all I really have at the moment.
Yeah, how did people get to your... Because I wasn't sure if you've got links. So.
If I... I'll send you the link to the channel after the stream and put it in the description.
Yeah, and the Zero Kev has come in on Entropy with Dr. Seuss used to make some of the most offensive comics depicting Japanese people. Anti-Japanese sentiments were indeed very popular in progressive and socialist circles well before Pearl Harbor. So there we go. That's kind of interesting, isn't it? And now he's being cancelled for it, which is a bit odd. I mean, can't they just say, the context of the time, it was the war? I don't really understand. This seems to have pushed wokery into a whole new realm now where it can't even understand the context of a war. It's bizarre.
Quite logic to it, eh?
Well, indeed. Yeah, it's just raw power. Yeah. You can still buy my courses, of course, Foundations of Logic, Foundations of Writing, Foundations of Economics. The calculus course is going to be out in a couple of days, possibly even out later today or tomorrow. So that's another one. And I'm still, slowly trying to, get rhetoric done. I'd rather not rush it just for the sake of getting it out, and I'd rather get it right. So there's that. And that is that. Oh, yes. And subscribe to my friend Morka and AA Gold. And join us tomorrow for Cigar Stream. Now get out, everyone. Get out.